So please welcome Ruth Conniff. What's your title? The political editor of the Progressive magazine. Progressive is a solid conservative magazine with, along with the National Review.
Thanks, Ed. Hi, friends. So Ed called me up just a few days ago and said, I have this great idea. I think that we need to put the word out that we need to run, in this recall campaign, we need to run a candidate who doesn't take money from super PACs, unions, corporate interests, out-of-state funds of any kind. And I thought, great, this is just the kind of cause that the Progressive magazine is going to associate itself with. There's going to be a lot of skepticism. But I got to tell you, the more I listen to Ed, the more excited I have gotten about this. And I realize that this idea is going to make people very, very nervous. You know, what's this idea of a grassroots-led recall campaign? I mean, the idea here, as we all know, is that this network of neighborhood groups and ordinary citizens came together for these huge, historic, spontaneous rallies at the Capitol, and then stood out in the cold and gathered a million-plus signatures, and now it's time for the professionals to take over. Because after all, we're looking at a very expensive TV ad war. Millions and millions of dollars in out-of-state money are going to be flooding our airwaves with negative ads, because that's politics in the Citizens United era, right? So Ed looks at this and says, what? Why? The whole uprising against Walker has been a grassroots citizen-led effort. And the voice of authority has been a little behind. The New York Times, for example, remember when Monica Davey wrote her article last March saying that the whole thing was over? So this election, the idea is this election, why should it be any different? Why should it not be led from below? And there are very legitimate questions about why not. Here are the legitimate worries. If we don't get in the game, we are going to be creamed by the Walker campaign finance juggernaut. Because as Mike McCabe, I'm sure, is about to tell you, this is historic. This is the first time in the history of our state that we have ever seen this kind of money for a statewide race. It was already historic when he ran the first time. Now he's raised $12 million in the last year. He raised $4.5 million in just 5 weeks, 61% of that money from out of state. And the last time I checked, the Democrats in United Wisconsin had raised about $480,000. So you can look at that two ways. You can look at it as a race we've got to get in, or you can look at it as a race that we cannot possibly win. If this is a money race, we are going to lose. And I think that is a very compelling argument that Ed makes. And here's another good argument. Corruption, more than union busting, more than these hideous budget cuts, is quickly becoming the issue in the recall campaign. Wouldn't it be great if, as Walker's aides and associates are being carted off to jail, we had a candidate who had made campaign finance reform and good government lifelong political issues? I'm just saying. The more you read, the more you realize that all of these folks in the Walker administration, dating back to his time as Milwaukee County exec, know each other and have been scratching each other's backs for a long, long time. I wrote a piece recently about Michael Best and Friedrich, the law firm in the Glass Bank right across the street from the Capitol. And after I wrote that piece and compared Walker's attorney to John Gotti's attorney, who federal prosecutors called in-house counsel to the Gambino crime family, and he was no longer allowed to represent them after that, I've had the rather unnerving experience of having neighbors come up to me and say, how are you doing? What have you been hearing? So I live in the same neighborhood as this man. But, you know, I have to say, I think the mob lawyer comparison is pretty apt. You know the details. Michael Best, or the firm, held its secret redistricting sessions in a secret conference room, and the details are still, they're scrambling to suppress them, to consolidate Republican control of our state. Eric McLeod, Walker's attorney, gave tens of thousands of dollars of free legal advice to Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman on his ethics problems. And then McLeod sat and watched as Gableman cast a deciding vote in favor of his client, Scott Walker, on the union busting law. It was just an outrage by any legal ethical standard. And you remember, Gableman needed McLeod's help in the first place because he won election in a race so dirty it made national news because of the massive spending and because of the dishonest Willie Horton ads that he ran. He was so unqualified, he was the most overturned judge in the state. And it really says something about the power of the business lobby and the money they poured in, both within Wisconsin and outside of our state, that they were able to get him elected. And again, as Mike McCabe will tell you, business interests have shifted their focus not just on governor's races, not just on state legislatures now, but on state Supreme Courts, because this is where they think they can get the kind of favorable treatment to reduce the power of regulation and to make more money. So what do we do? Kelda Helen Royce has a proposal that would require two-thirds of the legislators to sign on to remove Gableman, and I say good for her, because we should absolutely make that effort. There is also a movement for an independent citizens' body to appoint Supreme Court judges. You know, the direct election of Supreme Court judges was a progressive era reform, along with the recall, and so there's also the possibility of recall for Gableman and other Supreme Court justices. And I just want to say this. I would argue that the Kloppenburg race, as disappointing and as much of a roller coaster as it was a very significant moment for the whole Wisconsin uprising, and it was a sign of our strength as citizens that we were able to run an incumbent justice who was so heavily financed to a draw with an unknown attorney from Madison. Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce sent out a fundraising letter for Prosser, asking businesses to make generous contributions to keep him on the court. And why not? Because he cast the deciding vote in a 4-3 decision against ethics rules that would have required justices to recuse themselves from cases involving parties that donated $1,000 or more to their own campaigns. So it's really pretty impressive that citizens of this state did what they did in that Kloppenburg race. It would have been nice to have that win, but if you looked at those maps and you saw how the color shifted, something very significant happened there. And I think the real lesson here is we have to keep up this fight. If you look at the last year and the Democracy in Action in Wisconsin, it is just an amazing, I mean, our Lieutenant Governor put it best, it's becoming a spectacle. You look at this incredible energy and you think, this is it. This is a real turning point. And people really are thinking about this deluge of cash and whether we're going to have our government as citizens anymore, or we're just going to stand back, as Ed says, and say, well, fascism is here. We just might as well give up because it might be fun. So as I listen to Ed and as I listen to Mike McCabe and John Nichols, who's going to speak here later, I really do feel encouraged that we can do this thing. And we have come so far and we have done so much. And now is not the time to back down. I think this is the time to really pour it on. And I'm inspired and I'm excited to be here. So thanks a lot. And welcome.
How many of you believe that Waukesha should continue to be part of the state of Wisconsin? One of our Fighting Bob participants has written a letter to President Jimmy Carter, asking if he would come up and observe the election process in Waukesha County with the next election. And while it's kind of funny, I think it's deadly serious, because I don't believe that Joanne Kloppenburg lost to David Prosser, and I think most of the people I've talked to think that that's the case. So I don't know that Jimmy Carter will jump on a plane and come up. He certainly can't get on a fast train, but we'll have to wait and see. I'm just going to introduce to you somebody that you've heard many times here, but who's doing a fantastic job of keeping us informed about the corrupt process that's now in place. As we're here, there's probably a room full of people about this size over at the Capitol handing out money for those who would support their programs. We have got to do something, and you know, we can go forward, as I think we should, to try to repeal the Citizens United decision or to amend the Constitution so that we can get rid of the whole policy and the idea of Mitt Romney saying, corporations are people, you know. And if you believe that, then you believe a lot of things. So we wanted to make sure that when we start this process, we start with a factual basis. What I can't tolerate is people saying to me, you can't stand back. We know we're going to lose if they put in $47 or $50 or $60 million. We know we're going to lose. But we'd rather lose that way than to not put up that kind of money and lose because they're going to blame us. 1 million people signed petitions saying we don't want this governor to be here anymore. If we can't start with 1 million people behind us and win, shame on us. I mean, the basic underlying work has been done, but the professionals have trouble accepting that notion. And that's what we're going to have to deal with today, and that's why we're having this meeting. And let me introduce Mike McCabe, who is doing the greatest job that I can imagine in terms of letting us know just how bad things are.
Thank you. Thank you, Ed, I guess. Sincerely, thank you for coming here and taking time out of your day. It never ceases to amaze me when we have meetings on a work day somewhere, and we show up in the parking lot, and we come inside, and I wonder, you know, is anybody going to come? And people always come, and, you know, so you constantly inspire me. I have to tell you that politics and politicians stopped making sense to me a long time ago. But this I know. Most people, present company excluded perhaps, but most people hate both parties with a passion. And this I also know. People detest the way politicians run for office. They detest the way people seek power. If airlines advertised the way politicians do, no one in America would fly. If car companies advertised the way politicians do, I don't think anybody would drive either. And, you know, and the bottom line is that there are huge numbers of people out there, a massive portion of the general public, who believe that both sides are bought. That's a reality. And when you look at the money that flows, what does it do but reinforce that attitude? Yeah, Scott Walker has raised more money in about a year than any candidate for any public office in Wisconsin in the state's history has ever raised, breaking his own record, because he raised about $11 million over a four-year election cycle to win the 2010 race for governor. In a fraction of that time, he's already broken the record, and hell, there's not even an election authorized yet. There's no formal candidate opposing him, because we don't even have an election, and he's already broken that record. And you look at where that money came from. You know, he says the same thing that all the Democrats say too, that all of his, you know, so many of his contributions, two-thirds or three-quarters of them or whatever, come from, you know, small donations. But if you look at where the money really comes from, first of all, 61% of it comes from people who cannot vote for him because they do not live in the state of Wisconsin. Half of the money that he raised came from 33 donors in the last reporting period. $1 million came in a week from four donors who gave $250,000 each, three business executives from Missouri and one from Texas. The guy from Texas, Bob Perry, is best known, of course, for the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth ads that were ran as a smear campaign back in the 2004 presidential election. But, you know, the thing that Scott Walker is then able to say is, I'm only raising this money from out of state because I'm countering all this money from out of state. And there's enough of a kernel of truth to it that he's able to spin this fantasy that his is a grassroots campaign when half of the money comes from 33 donors and it's coming at $250,000 a pop. But, you know, if you look at the summer recall elections, the biggest spender on the Democratic side reported spending almost $11 million, and over $10 million of it came from outside of Wisconsin. And so what you've got is all of this evidence, election after election, that just drives deeper the belief that both sides are bought. And the public also believes a popular myth. Most people believe that Republicans get most of their money from business interests and most money for Democrats comes from labor unions. Well, first of all, I can tell you that since we track state contributions at the Democracy Campaign, I can tell you that business interests give $12 on average for every dollar that labor unions give to candidates for state office. But among Democrats, business interests give $6 for every dollar that Democrats get from labor unions. And for that reason, Union leaders stopped making sense to me a long time ago. Because here for 30 years, let me say this. Business has capital. Unions have people. And yet for 30 or 40 years now, unions have gladly been operating in a capital-intensive system. And they've even fought us and actually publicly and openly resisted attempts to change that capital-intensive system. That just makes absolutely no sense. Business has got capital, labor's got people, and yet we've got a capital-intensive system and they fight to keep it that way. That's dumb as a stump. And so what is then the reaction at the Capitol to this disgusting spectacle that turns off people right, left, and center? When people believe that both sides are bought, what comes out of the Capitol? Legislation that would blind you to the financial interests of those campaign donors. If people think that the politicians are bought, then their reaction is, well, let's no longer let people see exactly what interests are behind the campaign donations. And the bill gets put forward by Senator Glenn Grothman, and you'd think maybe he'd be alone supporting such a stupid idea, but then, hell, a Senate committee says, this is great, let's do it, and they approve it. And where is the Democratic alternative? What is the Democratic alternative? We all face huge threats. And you're going to hear people get up here and talk about all the threats to the way of life we've known in Wisconsin and the democracy that we have in Wisconsin. But I'll tell you this. I think the biggest threat of all to our future is a lack of political imagination. What if someone ran for office Proxmire style? This is a state, ladies and gentlemen, where we used to send somebody to Washington, D.C. who never once spent $300 on one of his statewide campaigns for office. We live in a place that put him in the United States Senate and sent him back to Washington over and over again, and he would spend $100 or $200 on his campaign. And when I say, what if somebody ran Proxmire style? I can feel the collective cringe. I can see the words forming on the lips of the party insiders and the political establishment types. They're saying, oh my God, he's talking about unilateral disarmament. Prox couldn't win today. You gotta fight fire with fire, eye for an eye, for crying out loud. Well, eye for an eye will always make both eyes blind. And fighting fire with fire will do nothing but leave our state and our nation and the very idea of government by the consent of the governed in ashes. And so if there has ever been a moment that cries out, that screams for a need for political innovation, this is that moment. And you know, here we are. We have just said so long to 2011, and good riddance to that year. But people forget that 2011 was the 100th anniversary of the most remarkable legislative session in Wisconsin history, probably the most remarkable legislature in American history, the 1911 session of the legislature. That legislature struck blows for worker rights, created child labor laws, protections for women in the workplace. The 1911 legislature created workers' compensation. They enacted sweeping railroad regulation. They did insurance reform. They created the first state life insurance program anywhere in the country. They created taxation based on the ability to pay, the first progressive income tax in America. They established vocational, technical, and adult education. One legislature did all of that. But what they did happened for a reason. That legislature was no accident. That legislature happened because of what happened in 1897 and in 1905. In 1897, the Wisconsin legislature banned bribery. Now think on that a second. Y'all know when Wisconsin became a state. 1848, that means for the first half century of statehood, it was perfectly legal to bribe a public official. Until people rose up against the corrupt money changers of the time and they banned bribery. And then in 1905, corporate election spending and corporate campaign contributions were prohibited. Half of that law was overturned by the Citizens United decision 2 years ago. Well, what we have today is a situation where bribery is effectively legal again. And it's not that we are seeing public officials routinely taking the under-the-table version of bribery that existed in the late 1800s. It's that we all understand, right, left, and center, people understand that there is a new over-the-table variety that is perfectly legal. Now, what if we recriminalized it? And what if the pushback against legal bribery started with one side going cold turkey on legal bribery? What if someone ran Proxmire style? What if someone occupied democracy? You may say I'm a dreamer, but I am not the only one. People crave this, I'm telling you. Across the political spectrum, people crave this. If this isn't a golden opportunity for political innovation, I don't know what is. Because I'll tell you this, if somebody ran Proxmire style, they would have something going for them that Prox never had. 30,000 people were out there petitioning. An army of 30,000 people could fan out across the state and be where Prox was. It wouldn't just be Proxmire at Lambeau. It wouldn't just be Proxmire at Camp Randall. It wouldn't just be Proxmire at the plant gate. It wouldn't just be Proxmire at the state fair. He would have an army of 30,000 people at his disposal. There were 1 million people that signed those petitions. You could imagine that candidate running Proxmire style who could turn some of those 1 million petitioners into walking ads on sidewalks and street corners in communities across, put them in sandwich boards, put the same doggone messages that you'd put on television, put them on street corners, put them on sidewalks. You could have people out on country roads and busy thoroughfares who would be living billboards. You could put some of these people to work as panhandlers for the politically homeless. Brother, can you spare a voice? Small change for big change. You know, can you put something in my cup? You could raise some money that way to pay for some of those walking ads, some of those living billboards. Here's the bottom line for me. If you have a crystal ball good enough to know what's going to happen in this recall election, you're better than me. Walker might win. Walker might lose. It'll be close. I'll guarantee you that. But as things stand today, if he loses, he will not lose because people see a thrilling alternative. And that's what people ought to be offered, a thrilling alternative. He'll lose because people can't stand to have him in office another minute. He'll lose because he trampled on worker rights. He'll lose because he promised 250,000 new jobs and instead we got 6 months worth of job losses. He'll lose because of a growing corruption scandal that's surrounding him. that has now permeated his entire inner circle, his entire brain trust.
What brain?
He's entrusted it to somebody. He'll lose because the state of our state is turmoil. The state of our state is division. The state of our state is polarization. And the state of our state is in your face, my way or the highway politics, which ain't in keeping with what Wisconsin people want. So here's what leaves me scratching my head. Imagining a new kind of politics, a new way for running for office, is considered too risky. But it's not too risky, curiously, to depend on people concluding that they can't tolerate Walker despite the absence of a compelling alternative to the legal bribes and the scorched earth advertising that those bribes fund. We're going to have people who will turn it over to the professionals because they got to have millions to run ads, and those ads will sicken people, right, left, and center. And if airlines advertise that way, nobody would fly. But politicians do that anyway. Creating a positive and compelling and plausible alternative to today's politics involves risk. But liberals ended slavery. There was no risk involved in that. Liberals got women the right to vote. There was no resistance to that. Liberals created Social Security and wiped out poverty among the aged. That was risk-free. Liberals took on segregation and they passed the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act. Every single one of these undertakings involved considerable risk. So we are journeying into a great unknown. We face challenges never before seen in our lifetimes. We face a crisis in our democracy never seen in living memory. We live at a time when most everything that we hold dear is at risk. Talk about your turning points. So do we play it safe? Do we keep doing what we've doing? Or do we take a leap of faith? And the most important question is really a question for the politicians. Do you trust in that army of 30,000 petitioners? Do you trust in those million signers? It is time to take that leap of faith. It's time to discard old habits and imagine a whole new way of doing things. If there is to be hope for the common good, it will require uncommon politics. This I know. There's a lot I don't know. But this I know. The fate of our state and our country rests on our response. And this I also know. If fear of risk paralyzes us, history's judgment will be harsh. Thank you.